This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. When Trent Wagler, lead vocalist and chief songwriter for the Steel Wheels, came on The Spark way back in September to talk about making their brand of Americana music, he mentioned that the band had a new CD scheduled to come out in early spring. Come back, I said. And so he has. To talk about the putting together of the Steel Wheels' new CD, Lay Down, Lay Low. Track number one is called Breaking Like the Sun.
Is where you'll end, because your heart starts beating to that rhythm again. I say, oh, there they go again, telling the story like I don't speak French. Oh, there they go again, breaking like the sun when the day comes in.
We started the recording process in June of last year, of 2011, and we recorded probably about 8 of the 11 songs in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with Jay Lapp, our mandolin player and one of the songwriters we have in the band. He has his own studio in Ann Arbor, and so we started it there, and we walked away feeling really good about what we had, and yet knowing we had some more work to do.
What kind of more work?
We just simply didn't get through everything. We didn't have all the vocals done, and we had some more parts to add, and there were a couple more songs we didn't even get started on. Everybody seems to have their own way of doing it, and for us, I guess I would say from project to project, we've changed in how we do it. But some songs you'll say, okay, let's just get this thing done from start to finish, and so you'll start tracking it where you track all the instruments, and then you track the vocals, and you go ahead and track the background vocals.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. Now, when you're tracking, I'm sure 95% of people know what you're talking about, but for the 5% who don't.
Yeah. Tracking is basically recording, and with a lot of modern systems of recording, you generally are recording different channels or different microphones for different instruments or voices, and so each one of those microphones goes into a separate track, or at least that's the way we would have thought of it when it was all analog, was different tracks, and we still use that term even though digitally it's more like bytes and megabytes. But when I say tracking, I guess I mean you may be recording all together in one big room, but we may have 8 or 9 different tracks going at one time. We might have a microphone on the bass and a microphone on the guitar and my vocal microphone, and all of that's going in. And then other times, the way you can track something out is by building it piece by piece. And so you may start with just a guitar, and you might just play the guitar and play that part, and then you might add the vocal, and then add the bass, and then just keep on layering on top. And that would be one extreme, and the totally live recording would be the other extreme, and there are so many different things you can do in between. And we found ourselves doing almost every extreme. Usually for us, we get the best results when we do things fairly live. There's something about the energy that you get when you're all playing together that just seems to have more feeling in the end product, and it's not always tangible, but when we have tried to track things one at a time, even when it sounds more precisely good, like every track sounds more, like the guitar just sounds more isolated and higher quality by the end, something seems to be lost. And so generally, we have tried to record things as live as possible. Having said that, going back to this project, in June we did a lot of the initial recording, and we walked away, like I said, feeling really good about what we had. And then as we listened to it more, we realized that we had a few things we really needed to change. And out of that, we actually decided to join our friend Stuart Martin, who lives in Leesburg, Virginia, and he has a great studio up there. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, we decided not only this vocal might need a little tweaking, and this one we might need to add or redo a little bit, but we decided instead we're going to re-record all the bass and all the vocals, and we decided to also retrack a few different mandolin parts and guitar parts. So in Leesburg, it was one day Brian went up and played all of his bass tracks to every single song and totally redid it. And for me, I went up and did vocals over a course of days and did all the vocals and redid it. The only song, we did do one a cappella song on the album called Rain in the Valley, and that was one that we all went up together and did together.
There's a rain coming down in the valley. We're gonna wash in the river so deep. There's a rain coming down in the valley. Oh Lord, there ain't no devil going where I go. Ain't no devil going where I go. Ain't no water gonna bring me down. There ain't no devil now. Gather up the rain a coming. There's a rain coming down. Meet me out.
Kind of in the end,
we
sort of were looking at it and saying, boy, this has been such a Frankenstein sort of, you know, project where it feels like we're piecing it together all over the place, and is it ever going to come together as a whole? But the decisions we made to redo certain tracks were all because of sonic reasons, because we felt like we could make the bass sound better. We felt like we could make the vocals sound better. And I think in the end, we're really glad.
In performance or through, or because of technology?
It was mostly in capturing the audio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily always the technology we used, but it was just certain things we did and the way we mic'd it, or the mics we were using, mm-hmm. That just warmed up the sound a little bit. And, you know, we've wanted to continue to make our projects sound better. And we've done a lot of our own recording in the past, and we've been very happy with the results. But bringing Stuart into this project really helped us a lot, I think, in just upping the ante when it came to the final audio. He's an amazing technician, and he understands the audio way beyond me. He can lose me in a few seconds talking about what this preamp does versus this preamp, and do I like it like this or like this or like this.
Yeah, you're talent. You're not the engineer.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, he's got a lot of talent, but yeah, that isn't my talent necessarily, that's for sure.
There ain't no devil now.
When it comes to the final product, all that does matter is, yeah, how does it sound in the end? The process is such an experience. And I tell you, part of the process with recording an album is that your ears, you almost don't trust them after a while. You'll spend 5-6 hours listening to the same song so much that you're dissecting every last tone and overtone and harmonic. And then you'll set it down. And weeks later, you'll come back to it and listen to it again, and it sounds completely different to you because your ears need that time to kind of get away from it. And I think that's one of the things that's the most striking about that process. You really have to give yourself rest in order to actually find the gems that are there, and let go, too, because, holy cow, it's so easy to become overly obsessive about every little note. Didn't you hear that? Didn't you? You know, and we'll each do it. And we're all very good critics in the band, but critics of different things. And so, you know, I'm always going to be overly critical about my own vocals, about the way the cadence and rhythm of lyrics come across. And yet I may not be listening to the tone of the violin or the tone of the bass. And I'm going to get more critique from those musicians playing those instruments. All of our ears go towards oftentimes what we are most responsible for, which I think says something about our own self-serving nature.
Your loyalty is to the sound of the final sound of that CD.
Mm.
Am I right about that?
Yeah. I mean, when you ask about the album, I went directly to the recording process, but certainly the process starts way before that, you know, in the writing side of what we do, of creating an album and what songs are going to make this album as a cohesive project. And that's something we believe in. I mean, I think it's not necessarily the mainstream music direction to look at things in terms of an album and a package, or not altogether the case when it comes to iTunes and you can download each individual track. And, you know, it's almost, did we get one single that's going to be huge? With us, we want an album to have its integrity, and we want the project to stand as a full project, not just a random collection of songs. So that sense of this is a great song over here, but it really doesn't fit in this album. That made us feel much more strong in sort of being able to say, yes, this is the collection of songs. We want every one of these on here for a reason.
You were talking about the CD is kind of a song cycle. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that song cycle is about?
I didn't start writing songs that I knew were going to all be in the same direction, but it was more like these songs were out there, and then as we collected them back in, we started to see that these were related to each other. You know, it was almost more in that vein. We took the title track as to be the backbone for the album. The spine for the album is Lay Down, Lay Low, and that comes directly from a story of a friend of ours who went out to the New River Gorge Bridge on this fateful evening and was planning that night to go to the bridge and jump off the bridge. And not with a parachute, not with a bungee cord, but planning not to come back that night. And he told me this story and told me about not only that experience of standing there on the bridge and looking down and hearing the water. It was night, so he couldn't see the water. But then what made him decide to step back to get off of that bridge and come back home and sort of pick up the pieces and try to heal from the things that got him to that bridge. And in his case, some of it had to do with an abusive childhood where he was, for years, reliving experiences that he had. He even talked about, and one of the lines in the song is about he would oftentimes have these flashbacks of being abused as a child, and he was up on the ceiling, and he would always be watching what had happened in these flashbacks from up, suspended up on the ceiling. And he said, part of the reason I wanted to go to that bridge and jump was that he finally just wanted to fall down off that ceiling and go as far as he could. And that was such a striking story that to me just laid me out. And to think about that despair and that struggle that he was dealing with, and yet the joy of going to that edge and walking back off and becoming the person that I got to know. And he's an artist, he's a photographer, he's a father. He's there's so many things about him that he's done since that time. It's also inspiring. And I think that song, more than any other in the collection, really it really went to those extremes of acknowledging a struggle, acknowledging the darkness, acknowledging that we're all just in some way muddling along through this life and trying to sort it out, but also choosing hope. And I think that was what was inspiring to us, and it felt like a good spine to run the rest of the songs around.
Back after a break with Bob Levicky's Check This Out, more Trent Wagler, and Terry Ward's Ever Vigilant Eye on Art.
Each song has its very, very different process and story to get to the final product. Some of these songs definitely took time to write. You write something down and then you sort of work with it and massage it until you get to its final product. And some of them just came. The song at the very end of the album called One Night is a very special song to me. That was a song that I did write out without any instrument. I usually write with a guitar, sometimes with a banjo or a piano, something that can give me some melody and tune to work with. This was one of the only times where I sat down at a table with a piece of paper and just wrote. And basically the final product came out in a course of a couple hours. And that very rarely happens. But that song happened right after an evening where I got to take my daughter, Maya, to a show. and we were the audience. And I guess as a parent, sometimes it feels like you're trying to create these experiences for your children. You're hoping they'll connect to what you connect to, that they'll fall in love with music or art the way you want them to. And so oftentimes it just doesn't work out the way you hope it will. And this particular night, we decided to go to a concert at the Mockingbird in Stanton. And Maya knew that there was a balcony at the Mockingbird, and she said, oh, I know exactly what to wear if we're going to sit in the balcony and watch a show. And so she put on this beautiful dress, and she made me dress up. She told me to put on a tie and then put on a jacket because I looked too young without the jacket. That's what she said. And so we got there, and we went up on this balcony, and we watched this beautiful show by some friends of ours, the Honeydew Drops, a great band. And we sat there together and just really enjoyed the entire show. And she ate some chocolate cake and got to drink a lot of soda and fell asleep. And it was one of those nights that the things that I hoped were going to happen actually did happen. And it doesn't often happen to me as a parent. It doesn't feel like. And it just felt so special. And so I went back home after that night, and she was asleep. And when we got home, I put her in bed, and I just went downstairs and wrote this song saying, you know, I need to commemorate this night. This is one that I want to remember. And what better way to remember it than to try to put a song around it? So it's called One Night.
One night you were a princess in a town that knows its age. We sat and watched the music and the colors on the stage. We leaned and swayed together, humming one another's tune. And you fell asleep upon me, like you could cure all my wounds, like you cure all my wounds.
I had some vocal training in college. I did take some voice lessons. That certainly helped me. It helped me in so many ways in terms of breathing, in terms of how to shape sound and notes, and just opened up a palette, I would say, of things that you can do with this instrument. It is very intentional to me as to whether or not I'm going to use a head voice or a chest voice. I tend to think of it as how much grit am I going to add to it? And that's not a technical term. Yeah, but to the tone. And part of that comes from what lyrically, what am I singing about? Is this a soft moment in the song, or is this need some edge to it? And I don't think too much about technically what's happening. There's a scratchy quality that can come in, and then as we were re-recording some of those vocals that I talked about, it was very nice because we had the time to really take each song at a time and really think about, okay, where do we want to go with this? You're able to really stop and take a moment and make sure what you're doing is what you want to do. And I think we did that more with the vocals this time than we ever have. What I think of it as when I listen to this album is I hear more times where I'm able to take it to a tender spot than I have in the past. You can always turn on the grit a little bit, but to bring it back down and choose those moments is what I'm a little more proud of.
Is it something that you record, go back and listen to, and tweak?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I think one of the things with the recorded medium that's so tempting, especially when you have digital ability, is, you know, with analog so much, you know, when you actually were dealing with tape and literally cutting tape, it was harder to be as picky as we can be now.
Yes.
You know, you can come in and patch in all kinds of things. And
there's
so many tricks.
And I take out all my stupid stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to keep that stuff we just did. Yeah, yeah. but I think what is important with the stuff we're doing, you know, we're proud of the fact with our band that we can play live everything that we record.
Yes.
And that it usually sounds pretty close to this final product. And we've had that compliment from DJs and from other people too. And so that is a part of our identity. We're not playing this stuff on a laptop when we get to the shows. This is all our instruments and our voices, and we can recreate it pretty well. However, you also want a really polished product at the end. And so there are times the interesting choices are the ones where you have to decide, is that note out of tune or does that note have character? You know? And I mean, that's like, that's sort of saying, you know, like, oh, that's jazz. You know, that's what some people's excuse for a bad note. And no offense to the jazz folks out there. But it's a serious question, because sometimes what makes your sound unique, you can kind of squeeze that out of a product that you're trying to make very precise. You no longer are going to have anything that really sounds real and authentic and who you are. And so we had to make choices. There were times where I was so self-critical that I was like, I don't know, that note sounds a little bit off. And Stuart or Jay or some, or, you know, Brian or Eric, one of the guys in the studio would say, no, I think that sounds vulnerable. That note might get off the tone just a little bit, but it sounds like, you know, what you're singing about sounds like it's cracking you a little bit. And that's the feeling we want. And so you're making those choices, not always from a technical, vocal, or otherwise musical perspective. You're kind of looking at it from just the general feeling you get from the sound. And that's the fun choices I think we have to make. And the album's full of them, you know. And I think it's sort of the curse of the digital age that you also, you know, you can change anything almost. And so it sort of makes you, you really have to choose your battles with some things.
At some point you were talking about constructing the album, putting the songs together. And you mentioned the two words, breakout single. Is there a breakout single on this?
I don't know. I think that what I like about this album is it has a variety of styles, and that's what we always like to do, and it's what we like to record. So what makes that question hard is what song really represents who we are the most. And we showed up on the Americana Music Association charts this week for the first time. This is like, we were number 2 in number of ads, which means that we're probably going to hit the charts next week, but we were right behind Carolina Chocolate Drops. So that's really great for us. Yeah. But and a lot of people have said Halfway to Heaven is the song for radio. I don't know. It definitely feels like it's more in the vein of sing-alongable.
Rain keeps pushing me back off my way. Wind keeps rushing me and my mind starts to stray. There's a path through the storm, and I'm a long way from forgetting what I have back at home. I'm almost halfway to heaven. I'm almost halfway to heaven. I'm almost halfway to heaven. I'm coming home to you. I'm almost halfway to heaven.
What from this CD? It's a lot of work. So what are your hopes?
I think that there's a lot of ways for me to answer that question. I think on the business and family level, I have a lot of hopes that, and we have a lot of things set up for us this year already, for it to grow our fan base, have a lot of people hear it, get good results in radio, which hopefully, you know, also means more people coming to shows, more people knowing about your music. That certainly is a part of what I think about when it comes to, okay, we've got a new album. I think this is one of those things where it's a crossroads, as you're pointing out, that it's art and it's also the pragmatic, like, how are we going to feed the family kind of questions. And I think the artistic side of me wants to simply say, I just hope people listen to it and that they actually sit with the music and that it means something to them, that it actually does connect on a level for them. When that happens, I feel successful, and I want more and more people to hear the music so that could happen. I think that is, you know, it's a less kind of dollar signs, it's more abstract of a goal, but that's really, it's why we like to do this. And I think as long as As long as it keeps growing and it feels like there is an upward swing of people continuing to want to hear what we're doing and be involved with what we're doing, then I think we'll keep doing this.
Here's a link to the Steel Wheels website on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Okay, Steel Wheels, take us out.
When the time is right for silence, you never tell me to keep still. I always try to dance like you, but I never will. Yeah, my legs keep time, my hands are fine, but there's something that you do. When you move in me, and now I'm coming home for you. I'm almost halfway to heaven, I'm almost halfway to heaven. I'm almost halfway to heaven, I'm coming home.